Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Brian Curtis, along with Doug Krisner. Join us each day for the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Later this year, Apple will deliver some of its new AI features using data centers engineered with Apple's in-house microprocessors. This is part of a sweeping plan to infuse Apple devices with AI capabilities. Sources telling Bloomberg the company will place its high-end M2 Ultra chips in its cloud computing services. Those chips debuted last year as part of the Mac Pro and Mac Studio computers. Simple AI tasks will be processed directly on Apple's computers and mobile devices. Apple is expecting to lay out an ambitious AI strategy at the Worldwide Developers Conference that will happen on June 10th. Brian?
All right, let's bring in Mark Gurman for a closer look at this story, Bloomberg Chief Global Technology Correspondent and one of the experts on Apple. Mark, so this is in data centers. How does this actually work and compare with AI inference?
Very good question. So Apple's developing multiple large language models. Some of the LLMs are going to run on the devices themselves, so in the iPhone, in the iPad, in the Mac, in the Apple Watch. Another set of the LLMs that Apple's developed are going to run on the cloud itself. Why is that important? Well, some of these large models can't actually fit or run on the processors in the phone. You need more space. You need more advanced processing power. And so you go to the cloud. And so what Apple's done is they outfitted some of their data centers with M2 Ultras. That's currently their highest-end processors with the biggest AI capabilities and processing horsepower. And so the more advanced features, like summarizing a lot of text, image and text generation, those are going to rely on the data centers, whereas simpler tasks are going to involve running directly on the phone themselves.
So in terms of the chip, I'm going to imagine that the chip is being manufactured by TSMC. Is Apple partnering with another firm in terms of the construction of the actual server itself?
Well, these chips, the M2 Ultras, these shipped actually last June, so these have been on the marketplace for a while. As you know, TSMC is the exclusive manufacturing partner for Apple's chips at this point, right? So those are TSMC made. I don't expect this to be a big boon to TSMC. This is part of the normal cadence of manufacturing for these chips anyways. There's a new chip, that's the M4, that Apple announced in the iPad Pro earlier this week. A version of that later next year, will come to the data centers for more increases in processing power as they expand the cloud performance here.
Perhaps we can talk a little bit more about these AI type of chips, but I also wanted to get to a comment by the ARM CEO, Rene Haas. He talked about how geopolitics has hurt Apple in China and that local brands are getting featured there, and we understand that. But he also said that they're not going to cede that ground. And I'm wondering how that translates and what it translates into. Does that mean that Apple might get more aggressive on pricing in China?
Well, to that end, here's the good news for Apple in China. They've been losing some steam there. They've been losing some share there. But they've done nothing to stop the bleeding. They haven't pulled any lever available to them to try to turn things around there, right? And so the good news is it's very likely as they start pulling those levers, you're going to start seeing a turnaround. Pricing, lower-end devices, colors, promotions, new financing plans particular to the Chinese market. Those are all things you can see Apple try to engage with over the coming months.
So, Mark, if we circle back and talk a little bit about Apple's approach to artificial intelligence, we know that Microsoft, for example, has been working with OpenAI. In fact, they have a big position in the company. And then down the road in Silicon Valley, you've got Google, Alphabet, really, in partnership with Anthropic along with Amazon. Is Apple choosing to partner with anybody when it comes to artificial intelligence?
So the models that I described, the cloud model, as well as the in-house model, those are developed internally at Apple. And so those are Apple models. However, Apple has not developed its own generative AI chatbot, things like Google Gemini, things like OpenAI's ChatGPT. That's actually where Gemini from Google and OpenAI come into play. Apple is in talks with both of those companies to partner with them to implement their chatbots deep into the new version of iOS and the new iPhones coming in the fall in September. I expect Apple to ultimately partner with OpenAI. Talks have advanced. They've intensified, I've reported, a couple of weeks ago. And at this point, it seems pretty likely that there's going to be a deal with OpenAI reached by June when this announcement is expected. And it's also possible to come to an agreement with Google at some point, too.
And I also wanted to ask you about this ad that they now have, that Apple now has said will not run on television, about the iPad and the destruction of a lot of creative tools that let's say the human condition has been using for thousands of years into an iPad. Just your thoughts about the thinking behind that and perhaps where and how it went wrong.
I see exactly what Apple was trying to do. Here's a very simplistic perspective. They were trying to show that the iPad is super thin and they're using an industrial press machine to squeeze in all the items that are in that people can do on the iPad, the physical items, but squeeze it into that really thin 5-millimeter device. So that's what they tried to do. How it appeared, Apple's destroying everything that people love from the real world in favor of using the iPad. Not a great look. Obviously, they missed the mark. If they had come to that conclusion beforehand, maybe they wouldn't have done it this way. I think it was a ridiculous move that this ad even made it to market. But I guess this is like the third apology in the history of Apple, so we'll take this one until the next crisis in 15 years from now.
So give us your assessment of the new iPad. I mean, it's been a while since they've updated this product line. I mean, what's your take?
It's a spec bump. It looks better. It's cooler. It doesn't do anything new. It doesn't change the iPad story. They still need to upgrade the software on this thing to make it more like a Mac replacement or a laptop successor. It doesn't do anything differently than the last iPad, the iPad before that, or the 10 models before that. So the hardware is awesome, but the hardware on the iPad has always been awesome. The problem's always been the software. This doesn't change that one bit.
Yeah, so the iPad was positioned between the phone and the laptop, but a lot closer to the phone. Then the phone got bigger. So as I've read from a lot of the stuff that you've written, this is an effort going in the other direction. How much further does it need to go to get closer to a laptop without actually trying to become one?
Well, I'll answer it this way. It needs to become a laptop. They need to go all the way, or this device.
But then why do you need a laptop then if you've got an iPad that is a laptop?
Well, the Mac line isn't doing so hot. The iPad line is not doing so hot. You should create, if you're Apple, the best version of the iPad that you can make, and they're just holding that product back. So what if it kills the laptop? Something's going to kill the laptop one day. It might as well be Apple. But right now, they're just kind of screwing around and creating this in-betweener device. They've moved way past that. The market has moved way past that. It's time to kill the laptop or make this a laptop replacement, make the laptops even better.
German tells it like it is. Mark, thank you for joining us. Some very interesting comments there. Mark German, Bloomberg Chief Global Technology Correspondent.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The Securities and Exchange Commission is launching a probe into claims made by Boeing about its own safety practices. This after a January accident aboard one of the 737 MAX 9 planes. Joining us now is Julie Johnson, Bloomberg senior aerospace reporter. So what is it that the SEC is particularly concerned about, that perhaps these comments about the safety record were inaccurate or went too far?
Well, that's what we'll find out, or not. We'd love to know a little bit more about what they're looking into, and whether the company made assurances to investors. I mean, they've been stressing safety publicly ever since the 2019 accidents and global grounding. So it's I think the regulators will want to know whether Boeing maybe oversold what was going on in its own factories, but the actual details we don't have.
So this is the panel that blew off that MAX 9, the Alaska Airlines flight. Am I right about that? And since that time, there have been a lot of other issues that the company has had to address regarding things like safety and design and manufacturing.
Yeah, that January incident really sort of precipitated this whole crisis. And so Boeing's being investigated on a number of fronts. You've got the FAA and NTSB looking into what happened with that accident, what went wrong within Boeing's own factories. And then the FAA has come down really hard on Boeing over the last few months, and has its auditors, in Boeing's factories and looking very closely at quality controls and safety. And Boeing's got a critical report coming up on that. And then there's a criminal investigation launched by the Justice Department and a grand jury in Seattle. So it's really been something else for Boeing.
Julie, is there any suggestion of a whistleblower on this?
I don't think so. I think this is more looking at whether the company's private practices were in line with what it was saying publicly around what was going on in its factory. And just as a reminder, with the SEC, we don't know of any allegations of wrongdoing here, and these enforcement actions don't always flow from investigations. But quite often, the agency can levy fines against the company or the corporate officers.
So it's not just Boeing, from what I understand. I mean, Spirit AeroSystems, which is the company that manufactures the wing assembly, the fuselage, that company also has some exposure. But are they going to be swept up in this SEC probe, do you think?
Yes, actually, one of the interesting things is that we found out about this in part because Spirit had a very detailed explanation of the various probes and subpoenas that it's facing in a quarterly financial statement that it made on Tuesday. And they disclosed that the SEC had subpoenaed them, related to the 737 MAX issues in the Alaska incident. They didn't provide a whole lot of details, but it was pretty clear the agency was looking hard at Spirit, and they're so closely tied to Boeing on this that that it made sense that Boeing was also a target.
Julie, do we have any new information about exactly what's happening with the chief executive officer position at Boeing?
Oh, I'd love to know what's going on there. The board is searching for a new CEO, and they launched that search back in March, and it's being led by the chairman, Steve Mollenkopf. And Dennis Muilenburg is the former CEO.
Former.
Dave Calhoun, the current CEO, is staying on until a successor is found. And the board's sort of given itself a lot of leeway with that search, and by saying that Calhoun will be around through the end of the year, but you get the sense that they would like to get this done sooner rather than later, just because right now it's a bad time to be, you know, in transition to your new leader.
And it's a bad time for the airlines that have been waiting for new aircraft. I mean, that's the other part of the story, that production has come to a virtual standstill, and you have many airlines that have been unable to take delivery of new aircraft.
Yeah, that's so true. It really has become a huge sort of pressure point for the whole industry. And you've seen a lot of frustration voiced by the U.S. carriers as well. And, you know, I mean, Boeing's got its own problems, but everybody's struggling. I mean, Airbus is doing better, but they're not hitting delivery targets either. So it's just a bad time for an airline, you know, that's out there looking for planes.
I'm kind of curious, something that you alluded to moments ago, but I'd like to hear more on it, about the coordination and or differences between the SEC and the FAA when it comes to Boeing.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I wish I knew what was going on behind the scenes, but, you know, because sometimes we get our information sort of bit by bit, and we don't have the entire picture. But the FAA got sort of a black eye for certifying the 737 MAX and standing by Boeing back in 2019 when these tragedies happened and some of Boeing's shortcomings were made public. And so they've been, this time around, they've just been very, very diligent. And I think that the SEC action is something you would expect. And it's an election year in the U.S., by the way. So everybody's going to want to, stay on top of this situation.
One of the interesting things, and maybe you can weigh in very quickly on this, Julie, one of the very interesting things about this industry, and I'm talking about aerospace as it relates to commercial aircraft, that these manufacturers are almost self-regulated. They are expected to do a fair amount of the monitoring that you would expect a federal agency would do during the manufacturing process.
Oh, I know. It's a real conundrum for everybody. And the FAA is not a huge agency. This is part of the problem. And to fully fund them to go back, you know, to the days when they were climbing all over Boeing's factories would be, you know, that takes a lot of money. And the U.S.
Yeah.
Congress has been cutting their budget for years. So,
Yeah,
it's a big
that complicates. Yeah,
oh, it sure does.
Julie, thank you so much for joining us. Julie Johnson, Bloomberg Senior Aerospace Reporter. Joining us now in our studios for a closer look at markets is Richard Harris, CEO of Port Shelter Investment Management. Richard, thanks for coming into the studios. So May has been a reasonably good period here for both stocks and bonds. And we're waiting on confirmation of any kind of economic slowdown. And the reason why that's being seen as good news, obviously, is it might take a little pressure off the Fed. But when you get these, like we had the claims that Doug mentioned earlier, claims jumping a little bit, you wonder whether or not this is a welcome cooling of the labor market or some sort of unwelcome development, like a more serious slowdown. Your thoughts?
Well, the market seems to have the emphasis at the moment of eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die, because we have good news and the markets go up. We have slightly bad news and the markets go down. I do think that unemployment is going to be a very big indicator looking at forward, because we are relying on consumer growth driving earnings in the market. So yes, that's a very big narrative going through. But I'm not sure that we're actually there yet. I think that what we're seeing is that the market's quite happy to take a rather bullish view, a risk-on view all the way through, despite the fact that elements of bad news. You know, as we were looking a moment ago, the market's been relatively flat, despite the fact that we've had issues with Houthi, issues in Hormuz, the whole escapade in Gaza, and the market's been relatively flat. There are a lot of bad news out there, but the market doesn't really want to look at it.
I guess we can refer to this as the Dionysian trade. Is that fair? I mean, at least for the moment, right? Eat, drink, and be merry, and let it rip to the upside for as long as it's able. And I'm curious to get your take on what's happening in China right now. So much of what we have focused on here is the Fed and whether or not we're going to get a rate cut before the end of the year. The earnings, the quality of corporate corporate earnings here in the States have been okay. But there's been a perhaps a bigger question over a lot of what's happening in China. We were talking yesterday about the fact that the market's been powering ahead. Maybe this is just kind of the introduction of a lot of foreign capital that's testing the water in China. How much do you think of the move that we have seen either in Hong Kong or on the mainland is predicated on the assumption that the quality of earnings is going to begin to improve for Chinese firms?
Well, I think that's right. But I think a lot of the move at the moment has been stress relief. You know, we've had very weak period in China. We had huge expectations post-COVID and nothing really came of it. The Hong Kong market has been especially bad. And the Hong Kong market is probably likely to act as a warrant on China. You know, worse when China does worse and better when China does better. And China has recently been doing better. And one key reason for this, of course, is that the authorities need to keep that economy going. They can't have it in the slough of despond for a long period of time. So they have put a lot of stimulus into the market, pretty well $1 trillion, you know, which even for China is a reasonable amount of money. That's starting to come through. They haven't used the big bazooka, but there are signs that they may actually be now looking at restructuring the property market, maybe putting some of the bad debt into a bad bank, put it aside, making sure that apartments have already been bought or finished, these kind of things. If they can tackle that property market, I think the sentiment in China will improve dramatically.
The tricky part, Richard, is that markets get out in front of the actual data. That's why I don't think that really smart investors are always data dependent. For instance, you look at the Hang Seng Index, it has matched the S&P 500 year to date, 9% higher for both. And we have not seen good earnings in Hong Kong. We have not seen good earnings in China. And yet, the market has moved out. So we've talked also about the Qs, the ETF that looks at NASDAQ 100, and it's actually flat for the past 3 months. And yet there hasn't been bad earnings from companies like NVIDIA and Broadcom. So give me something where you're looking out into the future that the data of the day is not telling us.
Well, I mean, you make an extremely good point, Brian, because, you know, what we're talking here is the wisdom of the crowd. We all know the market. The crowd seems to sense that good news is coming through. You know, why is it that markets are doing quite well? And then the data comes through and say, oh, that's why the market was doing well, you know, because the probabilities of things happening become sharper towards as time goes on. And I think that's what we're seeing with this this forecasting element. But doesn't it take you back to a big question about the Fed? The Fed is always data dependent. Well, if you're waiting for data to come through, it's too late. And maybe this is the problem with so many people in the Fed being economists. Maybe you should have more bankers in the Fed who actually spend their time looking forward and not back.
So the Fed has obviously been a key theme. Another key theme has been artificial intelligence. We were talking about Arm Holdings. We were talking about Apple a short while ago, getting ready to unveil some new AI features later in the year. How are you feeling about AI as a trade still? Does it have legs, or would you be concerned maybe that things are a little overextended in certain areas and it would be prudent to remove a little bit of risk?
Well, the AI bubble reminds me a little bit of the dot-com bubble of the 2000s. But, you know, I don't think it's anything like that. I think it's a mere shadow of that. And yes, we don't really know what AI is going to do. We had maybe a bit of a clearer impact of what the internet was going to do, but we didn't really know, you know, is it going to be the most fantastic thing? Is it going to be a disaster? It'll be a bit of both. And I think we still have to learn how AI is going to work, like the early days of the automobile when a man walked in front of it with the red flag. So we're still looking at that. But I think that AI is clearly going to be important. There are new things happening. I mean, Apple is particularly interesting in that they're using their own chips for some of this stuff. And everybody thought Apple was dead about 2 weeks ago. You know, it was an exposure to China, the ecosystem slowing down, iPad slowing down. And all of a sudden, you have this new thing coming through where Apple actually does have a stake in it. So all of these things are happening at the moment. I don't think the AI bubble is over yet.
You keep referring to it as an AI bubble, and And yet the earnings for a lot of these companies are growing into the valuations. I know that Doug Richard has done a PhD in market narratives. So he's quite an expert on narratives. And he got that PhD in his 60s, which is pretty impressive. Mm.
That was only last year, by the way.
I know. It's really quite intense and amazing. Do you think you're jumping the gun a little bit with saying bubble? Because we have not seen yet, the full ramifications, the full implications of artificial intelligence.
Well, that's right. But we go back to what we were saying a moment earlier. You know, isn't the wisdom of the crowd picking out the potential benefits of these things early on? You know, why is the market moving in the way it is? Why does it have this risk-on element when we've had two wars, we've had issues with China, sluggish growth, a load of risks out there, and yet the market still continues? There is an underlying narrative, I think, from AI that at the moment for markets is more positive than negative.
I'm still going back to the guy who stepped out in front of the Model T with the red flag. Was he run over or did the car stop?
Well, I guess when they changed into second gear, when they found a second gear, then he was in trouble.
All right, Richard, we'll probably have to leave it there. Thanks very much for coming into the studios. Always an interesting conversation. Richard Harris is CEO of Port Shelter Investment Management.
This has been the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more. So you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.